papermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now, you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis, talking about what's going on in the news media and how decisions are made in newsrooms with some veteran journalists around here. And I'm happy to welcome that group to the table. I'm Rex Smith, former editor of the Times Union, now with the Upstate American. Here to my immediate left is Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady, now vice president of the New York Press Association.
It is an especially good day to be here today, isn't it?
Is that right?
Yes.
Is it especially good? Barbara, you agree? Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy.
I'm glad to be there. We'll let the listeners judge.
And especially here, once again, ladies and gentlemen, Ira Fussfeld, the former publisher of the Daily Freeman and affiliated publications in Kingston, New York.
Hello there, Bill. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's Rex. I couldn't remember the name. Everybody's name. We have Bill and Sam and Jody and Ira.
Glad to have you back.
Pretty much, almost.
But nice to be back. Good to see everyone.
I take back what I said about an especially good day.
It's wonderful, actually. Ira, you were on this show for, oh man, many years.
I've been on this show almost since the beginning, at least on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah. And
so that's what, 3 decades, we think?
More than 3 decades, yeah. Yes, indeed. Yes, this program began in the aftermath of Mario Cuomo's loss of the governorship, and that was, does anybody remember that guy? Anyway, we need to talk about public access to information. That is, for many stories about public policy, I think consumers of media don't understand how much they really depend upon. I say they do because they're the consumers. They really depend upon legislation that provides the requirement that governments make information available. And there are challenges in a number of ways. There is a law that Kathy Hochul has just signed into law in New York State, an anti-transparency and anti-accountability bill. Now, this is supposedly a bill that was sold with the idea of requiring government to inform employees or maybe even former employees when their disciplinary records are being requested. That is, when a citizen wants to know, well, who was disciplined in this department? You have to inform that person. That bill she signed into law. That is not really what this bill is about, right? Did you deal with that, Judy, and with the New York Press Association? Were you familiar with this legislation?
Yeah, and it came as a surprise to me. And in fact, what this is a delay law. It's another obstacle to the way of reporters trying to access basic information. This is a huge obstacle. It sounds like it's, you know, we're just trying to let people know. We're trying to be transparent with our employees or our former employees. But what this will do will just delay everything enormously. I was surprised. I didn't know it was out there. And I am upset that it wasn't on my radar before.
Yeah.
I was surprised by it. I couldn't believe when I was first reading the article about it that I must be misunderstanding what's going on with this. It's not only a delay, it could possibly just squash the attempts to get records because if they use as an excuse, well, we can't get the people who are involved. And when you think of the types of questions that the public, not just the press, but the ordinary public and other agencies, if people are seeking what are public records that they should have access to, and you're effectively being denied it because, let's say you're doing disciplinary actions for whether it's police or public works or some organization, there are people who are no longer there. There could be an unusually large number of people, and how are you supposed to be able to contact those people? there is actually no rationale that I could understand for even having this law.
Well, you alluded to something regarding the public, and you all have had much more experience with FOIL and with freedom of information. I've always found, and it's not a reason for us not to be continually aggressive and try to get this information, but I've always found that readers, and to the extent listeners mirror readers, do not feel the same urgency about FOIL laws as we in the media do. In other words, they read a story that says the Daily Freeman has filed a Freedom of Information Act to get this information. And my experience was I got a lot of negative response to that. Why are you bothering the government? These people in the public did not understand that we were acting in effect on their behalf to try to get information that was rightfully theirs. I'm wondering if you experienced the same thing.
I think there is some of that because there's this undue reverence for authority. And if they say, well, if the government says that we shouldn't see it, I guess maybe we shouldn't see it. Why are you bugging them? But I had found over the years that citizens did understand the reason for this and still do understand this. And that when they've experienced it themselves because they've attempted to get records, they understand why it's so frustrating.
What is really especially annoying is that the legislature passed this bill quickly, quietly, while ignoring legislation that would have actually strengthened the state's public records law. For one thing, so that people requesting information, reporters or anybody else, could quickly appeal what we call constructive denials. That is, when an agency ignores the requests, in effect denying a legitimate request by simply not getting around to it. That is a constructive denial, which, you know, you end up having to hire a lawyer and go to court to extract this information, which we in the media do all the time. We employ lawyers to try to pry information out. Ordinary citizens don't have access to that. And I think you're right that people don't understand how much effort is required to go into getting access to information that they, the citizens, paid for with their tax dollars.
Yeah, maybe we need to do a better job. In the early days of right after the Freedom of Information law was passed in the 70s and in the early 80s, I thought we had a lot more support for it. And over time, maybe we just started to take it for granted that people understood what we were doing and why we were doing it. I can remember the negative feedback we would get, for example, when we would publish salaries of public officials. Like, was that anybody else's business? Well, we tried to explain that, yes, it was everybody's business.
Because you're paying for it.
You paid for it. You know, and the other thing about this new legislation people or alerting people that someone has filed a Freedom of Information request about a disciplinary record, it will probably prompt a phone call from a person or someone's lawyer to the paper, the news media organization. It has a chilling effect. I can remember, without this law, having reporters file a Freedom of Information request at City Hall, and then within 3 hours, you get a call from the mayor's office asking, right, what are you asking for? Why are you doing this?
Right.
And in essence, trying to tamp down the request. So this is not good, and it's just another challenge we're going to have to face. And also, to the point of hiring lawyers, small papers can't afford to hire,
right,
lawyers to challenge these denials, these constructive denials, and any kind of denial.
And if you seek and receive court costs, then again, the public is saying you're spending our money on something like this.
What I was explaining is that you can, if you are, for example, a newspaper and you have to spend money to get information that is legitimately public, you can then file for costs against the person who illegally withheld the information. But that then, of course, costs the taxpayers further, and people don't like that. What? The government has to pay the Times Union this money? Well, yes, because the government illegally withheld
it. And it's your fault for getting that money.
Yeah, it's our fault for trying to get the information on their behalf.
And Judy, when you mentioned that years ago that we seemed to be in a better place, and New York was actually held up as a model around the country and even in other countries. And I think some of that is was the force of the personality of the person in charge and what their beliefs were and how good they were at spreading the word and promoting the idea of open government and why it was important and informing the public. And you don't see that now under the current administration. And with the Committee on Open Government, you don't hear from them the way we used to.
Definitely. And I can remember when Kathy Hochul took office, she promised transparency and greater accountability. And I just haven't seen it yet.
They all do.
Yeah. I should know that by now.
Yeah. I could mention that 2 years ago, I was nominated to be considered for a position on the Committee on Open Government as one of Kathy Hochul's appointees. And I did all the financial disclosure paperwork. I went to the state police and got fingerprinted. I was, you know, vetted.
Well, congratulations.
And,
you're on that board.
And I have never heard back. not only have never heard back, but my repeated requests and emails saying, where do I stand? And I used to get a response saying, you're still under consideration. And my most recent questions have not even garnered an answer.
Do you know who nominated you?
I know the person who suggested me, but it was as a governor's appointee, and I don't really know the governor.
Well, you got further than I did. When I was the editor of the Record back in the early 90s, I got this call from the second floor, from the executive chamber, saying, would you consider being a member? And I thought, well, yes, I would like to be a part of that. I like to stand up for accountability and openness in government. Never got a second call back.
Well, they were just curious.
Just how low will you go to get it?
So I guess maybe my vetting didn't work.
Yeah, you could be a security risk.
Well, I was appointed by Governor Cuomo to be on the College Council at SUNY New Paltz. So there.
So I'm still optimistic, although why, after saying this, I would be.
I think your chances have just gone down.
How much worse could they get?
I don't know. Maybe you can be Secretary of Defense. I hear you can get that job despite any problems in your background.
Yeah, but first I'll go out for a drink.
Yeah. Oh, dear. We'll get back to that topic in a minute. But while we're still in openness in government, and you can answer for this, maybe, Barbara, since you have many years of experience in Saratoga Springs, what is going on up there with the Saratoga Springs Accounts Commissioner? That's like a member of the city commission that oversees it, basically the legislative body.
It's crazy town up there.
Who has been charged with violations for preventing access to public records. Now, you don't generally go to court if you're an official and you deny records, but he's being personally, in effect, prosecuted.
Yeah, this is really weird, I thought. And I have to admit that since leaving the newspaper and in the last few years, although I'm still actively teaching journalism, I don't know the people in City Hall the way I used to and don't know the people who are on the City Council right now. So I've been following it. A lot of it I've been following the blog of a local citizen journalist named John Kaufman. He's got a Saratoga Springs politics blog. And he's someone who has done a lot of requests of public information with some success, and he'll report when it doesn't work. And in this case, he was unsuccessful in getting records. And then the Republican Party also tried to get these records. So then they really stepped up. It's kind of bizarre because in this case, it's not like we're talking about with the Hochul law where you had to go tell people that they're being requested. Here it was pretending that the records didn't exist when they did indeed exist.
Right.
So I was sad to see that it's happening and happy to see that there are consequences.
Although it seems to be a partisan, whatever motivates it, it is a push to get access to information. But this official apparently swore that there were no documents in his files pertaining to the Freedom of Information request, when in fact that allegedly was not true.
So. Right. And I think that happened to be a Democratic person who...
What do you know? Shocking. Yeah. So we'll have to come back to that when we get a little bit more information. But it is unusual that kind of accountability
would be there. I have never heard of that happening in all my years in journalism.
I have never seen it before as well.
Meanwhile, on the federal level, just one more thing before we turn away from this openness in government thing. There is almost no chance, I guess, at this point anymore that the press bill will go forward.
Remember, really? Say it's not true.
The Press Act, Protect Reporters from Exploitative State Spying Act, would basically establish a shield law under federal law for reporters, which might be essential in the Trump administration because Trump may well go after reporters who publish information he doesn't want to see out there. And under the state level, you are protected from having to reveal your sources, but not so in federal legislation.
This has passed the House several times, and we were just waiting for the Senate to pass it and for it to be signed by our president. Trump has put out the word to kill it, and so it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. It's something that's really needed at the federal level. I mean, I can only speculate, but I think that in the next 4 years, the reporters who cover Washington politics are going to rely a lot on leaks to cover what's happening in Washington. And I think without this protection, they are going to be at risk.
And as I recall from reading about this, that the protections that would offer would be as beneficial to conservatives, as liberals, as middle of the roaders, is for everyone.
Right, but the public is not into it, and the media is so lowly regarded these days that the average person will say, yeah, he ought to reveal his sources.
Right. You're hearing a lot of that, for example, with the defense of Hegseth for the Department of Defense job, because people who support him say all the negative things that have come out against him are from unnamed sources, so they're not as credible. But we can tell you, as professionals who've dealt with this, that often the unnamed sources are incredibly credible. And that's one of the reasons we do not name them, is we have to protect them because they are in danger if their names are released. They could lose their
job. As an industry, have long recognized that unnamed sources are not favorably received by the public. And as you point out, sometimes it's unavoidable. But my sense is that press is less likely to use an unnamed source today than it did 20 years ago.
I don't know that that's true from reading the newspapers.
No, I think they're still using it a lot. I think there's just a lot of attack. The latest stories about Hegseth from NBC News relied upon 10 current or former Fox News employees who talked about his alcohol consumption in a way that, you know, concerned employees, and how he, once he gets alcohol, he gets handsy, I think was where that quote came out. Quite the term. And this is just the latest. There's been a lot of this, but it does. So now Fox News, which had ignored, this is interesting, folks, if you follow how Fox News operates, they had ignored the stories about Hegseth that had gone on about his financial improprieties at these two veterans organizations that he ran, the sexual assault allegations, the payments that he made. All of these stories had not found airtime on Fox.
Of course not, because there's too much to say about Hunter Biden.
Until Hegseth's mom finally stepped up. And so she did an interview, and that it was an awkward situation for Fox, because suddenly they had to catch up their viewers who didn't know anything about this, and they had to do it with mom defending Pete. So there is a little bit of peril if you squelch a story that is legitimate journalism, which certainly the story about this Secretary of Defense designate would be.
And mom spent quite a bit of her airtime denouncing the press for what she said was threatening her. And what sounds to me like the press was doing, New York Times was breaking this story, was calling her and saying, we're going to run this story. Do you have anything to say? And called repeatedly, and she didn't respond. Eventually, they said, we're running the story whether or not you say something. And she viewed that as a threat. I think that's another common misperception real people have about the media, that we're threatening them. And all we're trying to do is give people an opportunity to respond to something that might be critical or might be explosive.
Just think of it. It's not the first example. I can't immediately point to another specific one. But the fact that Fox was not covering this Hegseth controversy, we shouldn't be amazed by this anymore, but it is amazing. This is a major person nominated for an important job, and the allegations are real, and not to report them is just startling.
I agree with you. And we're between a rock and a hard place. We must, in the media, must rely on credible anonymous sources, whistleblowers and watchdogs to report the news, and yet we know that by having them as anonymous sources, that can also hurt our own believability.
Do you think it was because he was a Fox employee and it would undermine, you know, his presentation as Fox and Friends on the weekend? Or was it more because they were trying to support President-elect Trump?
I don't think that they've been all over the allegations that were raised against Matt Gaetz before he withdrew as attorney general candidate. I think Fox was really downplaying those as well. And instead, they platformed him, if we can use that as a verb, and gave him airtime instead of reporting the allegations that were raised against him. So, yeah, maybe there's more than usual deference to Pete Hegseth because he's a Fox guy. But then, of course, so many of the people, I believe that the number is now 13 paid Fox contributors or anchors who are now pending appointment in the new Trump administration. And there are at least 8 more routine guests, people who are on all the time, though they're not on the network payroll, who are also getting appointments in the Trump administration. So basically, since we know from prior reporting that in the White House, Donald Trump watched television a lot, particularly watching Fox and Friends, it's clear that this is his major source of inspiration for appointments to his administration.
And information. Not and inspiration, information.
Yeah, both. Yeah, right. Yeah. I think that's right. Information. And I guess if it were a legitimate news organization, I suppose we should be happy that journalism was having an impact on the next president. But Fox basically behaves as though Pravda, if you remember the Cold War, this is now Fox will be the mouthpiece of the administration. The new White House press secretary, again, a former Fox contributor, a young woman, the youngest White House press secretary ever. And she is somebody who is basically one of the Fox talking heads.
So it sounds like there'll be a lot of vacancies over at Fox News.
Yay!
And what would your advice be to young journalists looking for jobs? I think I've heard this before, but what would you say?
Thank you. I mean, you said, I spoke to the Columbia Journalism graduates last spring and said, you will shame this institution only if you take a job where you stray from the requirement to speak the truth. And then I had to say, don't go to work for Fox. And they all stood and cheered. That was great.
Graduation.
Yeah. Journalism school graduation. Great. So I think that that's true. I don't think you can work for Fox. You know, this actually raises the question that we ought to talk about again, which is to go back to MSNBC's Morning Joe, because there was a moment that relates to the Hegseth story that David Frum, who is a writer for The Atlantic, who we remember was, in fact, a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He was the guy who came up with the phrase axis of evil. But David Frum has become a critic of the hard right swing of the Republican Party, and he made a little funny comment on the air where he was on Morning Joe. And with respect to Pete Hegseth, there was a talk about his alcohol consumption. What he said was, if you're too drunk for Fox News, you're very, very drunk indeed. And so during the commercial break, there was a little producer speaking in his ear, you know, the little IFB that you wear in your ear. He said, don't do that. Don't repeat that. So he didn't say anything. Afterwards, the co-host, Mika Brzezinski, read an on-air apology about what he had said. So what's going on here?
Yeah, what is going on there? I've listened to the on-air apology a couple of times, and it was, like, so heartfelt. And it's like, what are they trying?
I felt like it was a hostage tape reading.
The key phrase, I think, was in this moment of time or something. It was like, what moment of time are we talking about that this kind of flippant remark wasn't appropriate in this strange moment in time? What are they talking about?
For this moment that we're in, yes.
Yeah. I sort of remember a time when it was de rigueur that you would not say anything negative on the air or in print about your competitor. I don't know if you've experienced that. I think that times have changed, and although Fox shows no hesitancy criticizing MSNBC and CNN,
right,
I think MSNBC went for a more traditional role here and said, let them defend themselves. We shouldn't say that on our air.
I thought it was extraordinary and unnecessary for them to make that kind of apology on behalf of David Frum, and, you know, this is not our style to do this. They could have just let that ride.
Well, I think that it's disingenuous for Mika Brzezinski to say there are a lot of good people at Fox News who care about Pete Hegseth. You know, maybe there are good people at Fox News, but they're not journalists. Because if you have failed to report publicly about your former colleague who has been accused credibly by many, many women of sexual misconduct, if you failed to report about the financial impropriety, the lack of judgment that he's displayed in all of his previous positions, if you're not reporting that, you are not a good person at Fox News. And I think that the apology by Mika Brzezinski is wholly inappropriate.
And then Frum took the time to write something about this. He could have just, you know, swallowed it and gone on with his life, but he thought this was an important enough moment for him to record this for posterity. It's out there now. It's getting a lot of positive feedback on social media, and MSNBC is once again taking a beating.
I'm really glad that he did that. And I mean, the book on tyranny, that one of the things that leads to authoritarianism is when you cave and you step back. It's self-censorship. And when you allow self-censorship, you are going down a bad, bad slide.
You know, Plato.
Here we go. It's like a philosophical show.
They went to school together.
He spoke at their graduation.
Oh, 2 points. Oh.
Plato believed that democracy was just a stage in government development. He said that there are like 4 stages or 6 stages of government, and democracy was the next to the last, that democracy would always then decay into tyranny. So, you know, maybe we'll see if Mr. Plato, what was his last name anyway?
I thought that was his first name.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you remember the meatloaf?
Mr. Loaf.
Yeah, the New York Times had the honorific was the style at that time. So in second reference, he was Mr. Loaf.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so these are just some of the foibles. We cover journalistic foibles here, folks, as well.
We're not perfect, contrary to popular belief.
The high moments and the low, you get a chance to hear it all here on The Media Project. So we're actually going to have to leave it with that. By the way, who all, just before we go away, who is on Blue Sky now?
I am.
I am.
I am.
I am not yet.
I love it.
Yeah, I can't get a handle on it yet.
Oh, I think it's like what Twitter used to be.
How are you? Are you because you're finding people you're following? I haven't found a Twitter list.
Yeah, you will. It'll come.
They have something called starter packs that you can connect with and find everybody that you used to follow. It's really quite wonderful. It's just like Twitter used to be.
Yeah. Blue Sky's the place to be. You don't need to be on X.
Get there.
I will be there. And I've been following, there's some LGBTQ people that I follow, and they are talking about how they've turned to Blue Sky, and they are recommending
it. Cool. Another great journalistic tool. Okay, that's all we have time for today, folks. And this program has been a wonderful exercise in energy.
Blue Sky.
Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, Ira Fussfeld, and I'm Rex Smith. We thank our producer, Dave Agostina, for putting up with us. And you folks for joining us. Come back again next week, please, for the Media Project.
Newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the flow. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to buy a new fur coat. To get insurance, she employed skullduggery. She up and cut her husband's only throat. She chopped him into fragments. She stuffed him in a trunk. She shipped it all back yonder to her uncle in Podunk.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian, and Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustino. Thanks for listening.
They all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press.